rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded? Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Our quote for the day from John Quincy Adams, always vote for principle, though you may vote alone, and you may cherish the sweetest reflection that your vote is never lost. Well, that was before electronic voting machines, I guess. The robocalls are beginning. We'll have a report on that later. Here in Oregon, they're happening. They're happening in states all over the country. And some really, really, really nasty, underhanded stuff here happening. It looks like the October surprise is a November surprise. We'll get into the details of that in a few minutes, too. Right now, Lisa DePasquale. By the way, Tom Hartman here with you. Welcome to the program. Our telephone number, 1-866-440-8466. TomHartman.com if you want to drop into our live chat room. Lisa DePasquale is with us. She's the director or... It's DePasquale, Lisa.
Yes, sir. You should know by now. You've had me so many times.
I know, and I keep wanting to mispronounce it. I'm sorry. I must have known somebody in a previous lifetime who pronounced it that way. The director of the American Conservative Union, conservative.org, is the website. Lisa, you sent out a news release to talk show hosts all around the country. Mm-hmm. Senator John Kerry's recent remarks that people should educate themselves so they don't get stuck in Iraq is just another example of the left belittling the military. I'm assuming that you've now retracted this, that you've read the prepared remarks that Kerry offered to the press the same day in which it was clear that he was talking about George W. Bush being an idiot, not the troops.
I mean, I didn't read it that way. And I also, what I think is odd is, you know, usually when you do botch a joke or you missay something, you correct yourself right after. You don't just keep reading your speech. But it really, you know, even if
I don't disagree with that. I don't disagree with that. You know, John Kerry blew it in the way that he handled it, in my opinion. But what amazes me is that if you actually read his remarks, he says, you will get us stuck in Iraq the same as George Bush did. Mm-hmm. That's what was in his prepared speech that was released to the press within hours of the time that he spoke. And so anybody who bothered to do any homework whatsoever would have
known. Well, how do we know that's what the real speech said? I mean, did it, you know, I mean, really, how do we know? And
because it's what he was reading from.
You know,
he just wasn't doing a very good job of it. come on. Are you seriously trying to tell me, Lisa, that you think that a guy who volunteered for two tours of duty in Vietnam, who volunteered for military service, who has been one of the most outspoken advocates of our military men and women in uniform in the United States Senate for the better part of 20 years, that he's going to make a joke at the expense of the troops? Do you really think that?
Well, I mean,
you can't believe that.
You know, I mean, he's not made a joke of it since. I mean, you don't go in front of congressional committees and make jokes, and that's not what he did. I mean, he went in front of congressional committees and made false accusations, and really...
What are you talking about?
When he came back from Vietnam.
It was a false accusation that Vietnam was going to hell in a handbasket?
Well, no,
who was going to be the last person to die for a lie?
No, I mean, he wasn't talking just about... whether the war was going to be won or lost, but I mean the accusations he made against the troops that were there. But really, if John Kerry hadn't botched his joke,
then we would have to talk about the issues.
I mean, there's still other, let's talk about Dick Durbin. Let's talk about Patty Murray. Let's talk about Zach Murtha.
Speaking of apologies, how come you guys are not apologizing for no weapons of mass destruction?
I didn't say there was weapons of mass destruction. I'm sure they have. I mean,
but the Bush administration said that there is chemical weapons stockpiles. Where are they?
They've already acknowledged that they didn't find what they thought they were going to find.
Okay, we weren't greeted as liberators with chocolates and flowers, as Dick Cheney said we would be.
Have you seen the news of how a majority of Iraqis are acting now that Saddam is being put to death?
The majority of Iraqis are Shiites. They want to align themselves with Iran. Is that really what you want?
You know what? I mean, eventually we're going to have to allow them to do what they want as long as it doesn't mean that, you know, they're going to put forth another Saddam or something else. And I don't think that's going to happen in the current government that they've set up. But, I mean, that's not really the issue. I mean, the issue is...
The current government is operating death squads that are killing 60, 70 people a day. Come on, Lisa, you know this.
I have never heard that in my life. It's so funny. I love coming on Air America shows because I always hear these, like, outrageous things that I've never heard. You know,
Ayad Alawi, the previous prime minister, when he was made prime minister, as a way of opening his first day of his presidency, he went to a police station. There were six guys there who had been brought in for suspected insurgents activity. He borrowed a gun from one of the officers there and shot each one of them in the head. It was all over the Iraqi press. He was proud of it. The American press, it was a little tiny story that played for a half a day. The previous Iraqi prime minister, the current Iraqi prime minister, acknowledges that there are death squads operating within the Iraqi police departments and that he's powerless to do anything about it.
Hey, as long as they're operating against the insurgents, I really don't care. I'm more concerned about our people. I could care less about their people.
Then I misspoke, because they're not operating against the insurgents. They're operating basically against their ethnic opponents. What we have are Sunnis killing Shiites and Shiites killing Sunnis.
Well, I mean, do you really think that if we wouldn't have gone over there, that they would be, you know, peaceful little lambs?
Yes, they were before. There was no terrorism.
Oh,
there had not been a single act.
Please,
Lisa, name for me one single act of terrorism that had occurred in the country of Iraq before we overthrew Saddam Hussein. You can't do it.
What were we talking about?
We're talking about this entire issue of the, well, you say the anti-military Dems, and my point is that the anti-military, the people who have directly led to the death of 3,000 American soldiers, more or less, who have led to the maiming, I've got pictures on my wall here of young men from Walter Reed Hospital. One of them's missing an eye, one of them's missing part of his face, one of them's missing two legs, one's missing an arm, smiling for the camera and holding up their Purple Hearts. That it's the anti-military Republicans. The Republicans are destroying our military. The Republicans have broken it. They sent them over. It's the Republicans who sent them over there without body armor. It's the Republicans who sent them over without well-armored vehicles. It's the Republicans who sent them over based on a lie just for purely partisan political purposes.
You think that Republicans sat around in some room, some underground room, and thought, you know what would really get us going? If we sent the military over and had a bunch of them killed, voters would love that. I mean, and the thing is they're not doing, they didn't, you know, start the war on global terrorism because they wanted to hurt a bunch of military people.
Are you talking about the war in Iraq?
They wanted to, they didn't start it because they wanted to do harm to the military.
So why did Bush start the war in Iraq?
Pardon?
Why then did Bush start the war against Iraq? Why did he invade Iraq and then in May declare victory and then begin a botched occupation?
Well, first of all, he didn't declare victory. The ship that was coming back declared victory.
Bush did not declare victory?
If you're talking about the mission accomplished banner, I mean, that was put up by the ship who was coming back because their mission was over.
Okay.
My fellow Americans, major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Now,
well, Bush is wrong.
That's not a declaration of victory?
Obviously, he was wrong.
No, he was right. He was right. He was right. This was the first week of May of 2003.
What do you mean he's right? He acknowledges that the war is still going on.
No. He, in that speech, he said the war is over, and he was right. That was the end of the war and the beginning of the occupation.
Okay.
The end of a war is when you take out another government. You seize their military, you seize their buildings, you imprison their leaders, and you take over the government. We did that. He was right. We had a successful invasion. I mean, we're the most powerful military machine on Earth. It would be crazy to think we did. Took what, 3, 4, 5 weeks, and we successfully invaded and prosecuted a war, an illegal war, but a war against another country. Then we began an occupation that bears an eerie resemblance to Katrina.
An eerie resemblance to Katrina?
Yes, absolute incompetence.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
There was no planning for it. There was no preparation for it. Donald Rumsfeld said that anybody in the Pentagon who tried to plan for the occupation of Iraq would be fired because he didn't expect that there would need to be one. I mean, this is all on the public record.
Well, I mean, soldiers have already said that if they were to pull out of Iraq now, it would have devastating results.
All soldiers.
Well, yeah, not all soldiers.
Over 70% of soldiers in the last Zoghbi poll say that they think that the best thing for Iraq is for the United States to pull out on a specific timetable.
What soldiers? Did they talk to all the soldiers over there? I mean, what were they
doing? Yes, these were soldiers in Iraq that they interviewed.
poll results?
Yes. Yes. Today, the Army Times, the Navy Times, the Air Force Times, and the Marine Times
are
calling
all
for
those newspapers are all owned by one company that's a leftist company.
Gannett, so publishes that USA Today is a leftist company?
Yeah. I mean, but first of all, if you want to say this is what the poll said, that's fine. But I'm just saying
this is what the soldiers said.
It does not represent the beliefs of the military. It represents a company that owns these newspapers.
But Zibe polled the troops.
Okay, there are troops that can't talk to their loved ones for, 8, 9 months. I mean, how is he getting poll results from these people?
Yeah, and it shouldn't be. I mean, Bush should not have put them in that position. But, Lisa, always good talking with you. Conservative.com, the American Conservative Union. Lisa DePasquale for more information. Thank you, Lisa.
Bye-bye.
Good talking with you. 16 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Talk radio for the rest of us. We'll be right back.
The road that you travel on, there's one day here and the next day gone. Sometimes you bend, sometimes you stand, sometimes you turn your back to the wind. There's a world outside every darkened door, where blues won't haunt you anymore. Where the brave are free and lovers soar, come ride with me to the distant shore. We won't hesitate to break down the garden gate. There's not much time left today.
Welcome back to The Pillow. I'll help you escape the matrix. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. That's me, 21 minutes past the hour. Coming up today, by the way, the mega churches have responded to their fallen comrade Haggard. And the new meme out from the pastor of one of the mega church wannabes up in Seattle. Haggard's wife was letting herself go. Yep, this is what happens when wives get fat and lazy. It's all the woman's fault, don't you know? Bob Borisage is going to be here in our second hour about the big lie Democrats. Yeah, Democrats. Is there going to be a December surprise call-up of the more National Guard troops to Iraq? That in our second hour. And our third hour, coming up soon, our Twilight Zone alert. Are we all going to be on the no-fly list? Is America moving in the direction of the Soviet Union? By the way, welcome to our new affiliate, KQKE, The Quake. I'll be in San Francisco this weekend, Saturday, November 11th. At noon on the main stage with a book signing afterward at the San Francisco Green Festival. This is the San Francisco Concourse Exhibition Center. That's at 8th and Brannan. And it should be a good time. It should be a good time. I just don't get it. The Republicans are out there.
John Kerry needs to be held to account for dissing the troops. But we don't need to be held to account for the troops not being greeted as liberators, for not having a plan to occupy Iraq, for there not being an end of major combat operations, and Bush said that there was. For, more have died, more has been spent, more missions undertaken. For not finding the weapons. They didn't even know where the weapons were. When Rumsfeld went on national TV, he says, oh, we know where they are. They did have doubts about his weapons program, unlike what Cheney said on national TV. I mean, this is incredible. Iraq, no uranium from Niger, the torture incidents at Abu Ghraib, no isolated event. 44 people, actually. We have documented 44 people have died at the hands of American interrogators in Iraq and Afghanistan. 44.
Oh, it's just rough questioning.
Conditions haven't improved since the supposed handover of power. The conviction of Saddam Hussein yesterday, just in time for the news cycle today. And it turns out, by the way, that now it's quite obvious that this was politically driven because the court in Iraq is not able to provide the written verdict. Typically when you hand down a verdict, you say, okay, and here's the written rationale. Here's my, multi-page, 100-page document or whatever that says this is why I ruled this way. You do that. Courts do that. And the court in Iraq was not able to do that because they're not going to have it written for 3 or 4 days. That's when they were planning on having a verdict, 3 or 4 days from now. But we pay 90% of the $145 million a year it costs to run this court. We send lawyers from the Justice Department who advise the prosecution. We've been running this show in Iraq. I mean, it's really just quite that simple. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Wayne in New York, New York. Hey, Wayne, what's up?
Hey, daytime. How you doing? I love your show.
Thank you.
Hey, one quick thing your guest said that kind of slipped by, and I just had to call about. She was talking about the mission accomplished banner on the aircraft carrier, saying that the ship had put it up. It's been admitted by the White House they put it up.
Yes, yes, you're right.
She's still believing that. Oh, the ship.
Well, I think Lisa is still. Nobody told Lisa. But, Lisa, I have to give her credit. She's willing to come on this program. There are so many conservatives, and particularly conservative politicians, who are absolutely terrified. They are unwilling to come on this program at all. She's a trooper. She's willing to come back here. And one of these days, I hope that we can have a conversation at the level of, I try to get it to this more often than not of, what do you believe? Where are we going? And again, I don't want to attack Lisa when she's not here to defend herself. I really prefer to just have those conversations right up front with people. But the problem, the thing that concerns me so much right now, setting aside the whole, debate with Lisa, is this larger issue of politics being played in the United States like it's a sport, like it's my team, your team. My team can do no wrong. Your team can do no right. And we have to figure out the talking points for my team or your team. And it all becomes about talking points. And what happened to statesmanship in the United States? What happened to doing what's right for the United States of America? What happened to doing what's right for the majority of we the people? And that's the terrible loss. Wayne, thanks for the call and for pointing that out. That's the terrible loss that I am frankly mourning in this country. We used to have politicians, including Republican politicians like Dwight Eisenhower, who actually talked about the public good, who actually believed that there was a value, a high value, in doing what was right for the vast majority of people. But the conservative tradition, going all the way back to Sir Edmund Burke in the 1790s and his debates with Tom Paine, the conservative tradition has always been there should be a small ruling aristocracy and a veneer, a patina, an appearance of democracy to keep the rabble from getting upset. But we can't really trust them, because the inherent nature of people is evil. And if you don't have a strong conservative leadership that is really in charge, then, you're going to have problems. Right? You're going to have problems. It's a shame what American politics has come to. Right after the break, I'm going to tell you about these push-pull calls, and we'll take more of your calls. 27 minutes past the hour.
We'll come and listen in to a radio station with a mighty host, a living sing. Turn your radio on.
Welcome to our latest live affiliate, KQKE The Quake in San Francisco. We've been playing in the evenings there for some time, and as of today, just went live. 9 to noon Pacific time, noon to 3 Eastern time, and very, very pleased to be on The Quake. Our telephone number, 1-866-440-8466. Real quickly, I just wanted to tell you, this is happening all over the country right now. For example, this out of New Mexico. Yesterday, I received a phone message from the Republican Party in New Mexico telling my polling location was John Adams Middle School. My normal polling place is Longfellow Elementary, about a block away. John Adams is 7.5 miles away. Thinking that maybe my polling place had changed, I then called the Republican Party here and simply asked if they could tell me my polling place. They asked my address only. I told them, and they said, "You vote at Longfellow." In other words, the place a block away. This is correct, and I hung up. Then about 5 p.m., the Republican Party called again and left a message that my Election Day polling place was West Mesa High School, even farther away than John Adams. The caller ID shows Republican Part, as in party. Then around 7, the same thing happened. Republican Party New Mexico called and left a message telling me that my Election Day polling place was back at John Adams Middle School. Again, the wrong one. Voter ID, New Mexico Vict. They did a Google search on it. Turns out that's the Republican Party of New Mexico. In New Hampshire, the same thing going on. The WMUR.com, another story. Alex Borges, a spokesman for the Republican National Congressional Committee, said that the calls in New Hampshire would continue up to the election. The group distributes the messages without the authorization of the candidates. Turns out that on political day, messages some Granite Staters are receiving as election day may be illegal. Over Talking Points memo by Josh Micah. He says it now appears that isolated reports of the NRCC, National Republican Congressional Campaign Committee, robocall tactics began emerging a week or so ago, but they were sporadic. Now it's happening all over the country. Roseanne Roman, a Barrington resident, got the call. "Hi, I'm calling with information about Melissa Bean." That's the Democrat. She then got the call 18 times more. A total of 21 calls. This is very annoying, she says. Now, she thinks she's getting these calls from the Democratic candidate. You know, a wussy, badly done, please vote for me call. 20 times throughout the middle of the night. She says, if you only listen to the first sentence, you think they're from the Duckworth campaign. This is also happening in the campaign of Tammy Duckworth. But the calls aren't paid for by Bean Duckworth or even the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. They're paid for by the Republican National Committee. When asked why people are getting 15, 20, 25, 30 calls a day through the middle of the night that purport to be from a Democratic candidate, the spokesman for the RNCC said, well, because these calls are done by computers, it must be some kind of a glitch. Right. Jill Porter, GOP robocall tactics make me sick. Being sick in bed, which I was for the last couple of weeks, is bad enough, but being sick in the political combat zone, in this case the 6th Congressional District, is enough to make me want to kill somebody. My God, the phone calls. Just as I'm about to drift off to sleep, the phone would call, and it would be in yet another damn computerized message about Lois Murphy. One, two, three, four times a day, it seemed. The phone rang with robocalls about the Democratic challenger to incumbent GOP Representative Jim Gerlach in one of the nastiest races in the country. I never listened to one word of it, just slammed the phone down and seethed with resentment. Now, there's an effective campaign strategy, I thought, infuriate the voters so much they won't vote. Well, it turns out it wasn't the Democrat calling. So when she called the campaign, she says, what's the deal? Oh, it's not us. It's a dirty trick by the Republicans. The New York Times, an automated voice on the other end of the phone asked whether you believe judges who push homosexual marriage and create new rights like abortion and sodomy should be controlled. If you answer yes, then they say that you should not vote for John Tester. We've got robocalls, millions of robocalls going out across the United States right now. Many of them openly deceptive. The vast majority of them openly deceptive. They're being done by 527s and they're not being done by the candidates. They're being done by the Republican Party and by these 527 groups. It's amazing. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Duncan in Springfield, Missouri. Hey, Duncan.
Hi, Tom. I love your show.
Thank you.
I got a tape recording, and it said, we're taking a poll, and it had some name. And it said, are you going to vote for Jim Talent? I said, no. Are you going to vote for Claire McCaskill? Yes. Are you pro-life? Well, of course I'm pro-life. So I said, yes. And they said, you know, Claire McCaskill supports abortions.
Yeah. So this was a machine-operated call that was designed to cause you to change your vote. See, this is the thing. I mean, I talked with an election expert earlier on my local show here in Portland, and who said, you know, they're figuring about a 3% success rate. So if they can make 1,000 calls, they can change, you know, 30 votes. If they can make 100,000 calls, they can change 3,000 votes. 3,000 votes will flip an election in a lot of these congressional races. And, you know, if they can make 1,000,000 calls, they can change 30,000 votes. That'll certainly flip an election. And they've got huge, this is all being done by computers, huge banks of these things, and they're making hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions of calls as we speak, and they're doing it 24 hours a day. Throughout the night, they call and pretend that they're the Democratic candidate, so people get angry and irritated with the Democratic candidate. Throughout the day, they call and they do these push polls like you're talking about, Duncan, and it's just absolutely wrong. I mean, it's absolutely wrong. Duncan, thanks a lot for the call. Art in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Art, what's up?
Hey, Tom. During that interview that you had.
Yeah, with Lisa DePasquale.
Yeah. Her thesis and the reason that she spent the first 5 minutes of the interview was talking about what the senator from Massachusetts said and how he deceived the public and all this kind of crap.
Right.
Now, when you began talking to her and you mentioned a statistic about lives lost, American lives lost, she began laughing.
Well,
at what you said.
Yeah, that's because she was nervous. I
well,
mean, it's,
I know that's what, why
nobody,
it is.
Nobody laughs.
I know when, that's yeah. why it is, but can you possibly play the same kind of election politics that the Republicans are playing? Play that throughout your entire show. Your question and her response, which was 2 seconds of laughter,
yeah.
and get everybody else on Air America to do the same. Identify her and simply say, this is the Republican response to American deaths
yeah.
in Iraq.
See, you make a good point, Art, that her response is inappropriate, but to do that would be to do the same thing that the Republicans are doing with John Kerry. I'd rather simply point out the fact that people are dying. in Iraq. They're dying for purely political purposes. I mean, it's just really that simple. Cindy Sheehan laid this out. Mickey Herskowitz was the guy who was hired by the Bush family to ghostwrite George W. Bush's autobiography. It's in print right now. It's called A Charge to Keep. And Bush had a series of interviews with him in 1999. This is an old Bush family friend. And he told Herskowitz that if he got elected president, he was going to invade Iraq to gain political capital. Here's Cindy Sheehan's testimony before Congress.
As a matter of fact, in interviews in 1999 with respected journalist and longtime Bush family friend Mickey Herskowitz, then Governor George Bush stated, "One of the keys to being seen as a great leader is to be seen as commander-in-chief. My father had all this political capital built up when he drove the Iraqis out of Kuwait, and he wasted it. If I have a chance to invade, if I had that much capital, I'm not going to waste it. I'm going to get everything passed that I want to get passed, and I'm going to have a successful presidency," end quote.
So this is what George W. Bush was saying in 1999. What it's really all about is a 26-year campaign going back to the beginning of the Reagan presidency to roll back the New Deal, to roll back what Franklin Roosevelt did in creating an American middle class, to roll back Social Security, to privatize it, to do away with unemployment insurance, to do away with the social safety net, to poison pill Medicare so that we'll never have a national health care program, to roll back environmental protections, to do away with union protections. It's all about undoing the New Deal. As Limbaugh said,
"Roosevelt is dead. His policies may live on, but we're in the process of doing something about that as well."
And they'll use any technique, including killing American soldiers, to accomplish it. Bob in Dearborn, Michigan. Hey, Bob.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up?
You know, getting to your last guest, you know, I hate using the term these people or those people, but for obvious reasons, but what planet are these people on? I mean, you know, she can pile on John Kerry, and I mean, that whole thing went 2 to 3 news cycles. Where's the outrage what John Boehner said? She doesn't mention that. Where's the outrage of the media people on MSNBC calling Tammy Duckworth, of all people, a defeatocrat?
Yeah, I know.
Where's
I
the
know.
Outrage?
It just goes on and on and on. I mean, you know, where's the outrage of this administration lying us into a war from the get-go? I mean, let's go to the big stuff. I mean, it's just this. It is beyond the pale.
And Tom, real quick, is your book tour going to come anywhere in Michigan?
I don't know.
You're from here.
Yeah, I am. Right at the moment, no plans, but after the first of the year, that may change.
Okay, great. Thanks, Tom.
Yeah, Bob, thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. 1-866-440-8466. Jackie in Port Townsend, Washington. Hey, Jackie, half a minute before we have to take a break here.
Hi, I just wanted to point out that on the VA Watchdog website, the
VAWatchdog.org.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The disabled American vets give John Kerry a high rating, as opposed to the ratings that they give almost every Republican, which is zero.
Yes, and it's really quite remarkable. The disabled American vets have a rating system, the VFW has a rating system, and the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans Organization, IVAW or something like that, has a rating system. And in all cases, the Republicans are getting C's and D's and F's, I mean, terrible grades, because they support wars, but they don't support troops. And the Democrats are getting very good ratings because they've been supporting the troops. It's really quite simple. Thank you very much for the call. We'll be back. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the place where progressives fiendishly plot for total world domination, or at least a clean election. You know, we'd really settle for a clean election because most of America is with us. 45 minutes past. Welcome back. 9.5 minutes before the... You know, the thing that bothers me the most about this is that Ted Haggard was one of the leaders against gay marriage in Colorado. I mean, one of the absolute leaders, the guy once a week talking to George W. Bush and leading a nationwide effort, and certainly in his state, an effort to deny gay people the same rights that everybody else has. And it's just, it's, the hypocrisy of it is mind-boggling. Here's Ted Haggard preaching against homosexuality. This is a really an ironic little clip.
We've decided the Bible is the Word of God. We don't have to have a General Assembly about what we believe. It's written in the Bible. All right? So we don't have to debate about what we should think about homosexual activity. It's written in the Bible.
And then it gets weird.
I think I know what you did last night. If you send me $1,000, I won't tell your wife. If you use any of this, I'll sue you.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Freud and his slips, something to say about that. Anyway, welcome back to the program. Truth and Common Sense in Broadcasting. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-440-8466. Our telephone number. Brian in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. Hey, Brian, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I guess Lush will call him a methandulous now.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, I kind of know how so many people are dealing with these robocalls. Not as bad. Although I had Joe Piscopo call me, tell me he's a Democrat to vote for Kane. I mean, he hasn't been funny since the first Reagan administration.
Well, the Democrats have actually been doing some pretty good robocalls, and but they talk about the issues, or they get, you know, a famous person on saying, hey, you know, I like this person, vote for him, and that's it. You get the one call. I got a call yesterday from the Democratic Party saying, you know, have you voted? And I was like, yeah, you know, I mailed in my ballot on Friday, and because we do mail in vote by mail here in Oregon. And they were like, great. And I said, hey, thanks so much for doing the get out the vote work. And she was like, you're welcome. You know, thanks for thanking me. So, what the Republicans are doing is they're having these phony calls, these phony push polls. They're pouring millions of dollars into this. There's tens of millions of these things. And it is twisting and distorting the political process. It's wrong. It's just wrong. Brian, thanks for the call. Mike in Nashville, Tennessee. Hey, Mike, what's on your mind today?
Just a real quick question. How do these guys get around the national do not call list? Because I'm on that, and solicitors cannot call my house.
Actually, if you go back and read the law, and I remember I was doing this program a couple of years ago when that do not call list was passed, and there are two exceptions. Politicians can call, even if you're on the do not call list. In fact, getting on the do not call list puts you on a list that they have access to, and nonprofits can call you if you are on the do not call list. So these are nonprofit groups working on behalf of politicians.
And cute, you're good with that?
No, I'm not. I at the time that the do not call list was being passed through Congress, I pointed out that there's this huge hole in it. I used to own an ad agency where we did workshops and seminars all over the country on how to do marketing and advertising, and we had a competitor which was a nonprofit group. There were four of our five companies all together in that marketplace. We dropped about 2 million pieces of mail a year, and we had five guys who were four men and a woman who were traveling around the United States doing these workshops and seminars. I mean, we trained everybody, the Fortune 500, government agencies, everybody. And the major nonprofit competitor bought up our four for-profit competitors so that they could mail more cheaply, which, you know, really was unfair competition. I don't know how else to say it. And so when I saw that bill, I immediately recognized that they had this giant hole in there for nonprofits and for politicians, and said on the air, this is wrong. This thing should not be passed. You need to plug this.
I'd like to see that on the agenda after the elections.
Yeah,
thanks a lot for
I agree with you. You're welcome. Thanks a lot for the call, Mike. Melanie in St. Augustine, Texas. Hey, Melanie.
Hey. I was calling today to tell you I think your show is great. I wish it could be seen on regular TV. But I also watched that Hacking Democracy on HBO.
Yeah, wasn't that mind-boggling?
Oh, it was.
It is replaying tonight, I believe, and it's also after tonight will be available on HBO On Demand.
Oh, great. My husband and I are so sick of Bush Cheney raping the country of our rights, our soldiers over there being killed, and innocent Iraqis being killed. The soldiers come home killed or maimed or post-traumatic stress syndrome, which the government doesn't seem to be dealing with.
It's a terrible thing, Melanie. I agree with you. And there's a lot of noise there in the background on your call, so I'm going to move along. But thank you for the call. I appreciate it. It's good to hear from you. 1-866-440-8466. Our telephone number is Scott in Houston, Texas. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Tom. How you doing, buddy?
Great. What's up?
Hey, love the show. Hey, just wanted to see, get your perspective on this. I only see two possible outcomes of this whole Iraq war as far as the rationale for it. Either the Bush administration has made the most colossal, just mind-blowing, idiotic, bumbling mistake in the intelligence community in the history of the world, or they outright lied about it. I mean, does anybody else see any other possibilities than those two?
No, and the reality is that they did outright lie about it. First of all, you had Hans Blix saying, you know, only people, this is like believing in witches, believing that there's stuff there. We spent months there looking for weapons of mass destruction. There were none.
You know, in the Middle Ages, when people were convinced there were witches, and then they looked for them, they found them.
Yeah, and so that's, you know, Hans Blix. And then you got George W. Bush, you know, lying about it as well, even after the fact Bush lying about
it. The larger point is, and the fundamental question is, does Saddam Hussein have a weapons program? And the answer is absolutely.
No, the answer is no, he didn't. And that's what the Dolfer report said. And right on down the line. No, so the bottom line, no, it was not bad intelligence. That's the excuse that they're using when they get confronted with reality. It was a lie from the beginning for political purposes, and Bush said in 99 he was going to do it. 57 minutes past the hour.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 6 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Our quote for the day from John Quincy Adams: always vote for principle. Though you may vote alone, that you may cherish the sweetest reflection that your vote is never lost. This, of course, was pre-Diebold. Anyhow, welcome back. There's a battle going on inside the Democratic Party, and it may be importune, or, you know, some may argue that today is not the day before the election, to talk about it. But frankly, I think it is. I think it's probably the most important time to talk about it. And we're going to see how this election shakes out. And let me encourage everybody, if you live in an area where you can vote early, if you haven't voted, get out and vote. And well, here in Oregon, where I live, it's vote by mail. We've had a couple of weeks to do it. And if you haven't made provisions to get to a polling place on Tuesday, particularly if you live in one of the states where the Republicans have gamed the system and it's probably going to require you standing in line for 7 hours, please do so, but get out there. This is a really important election. And one of the things that's most important about this election is not just taking back America from right-wing cranks in the Republican Party, but taking back America from right-wing cranks in the Democratic Party as well. Bob Borisaj is with us. He's with Our Future, the Campaign for America's Future. He's the president of the Institute for America's Future and its sister organization, the Campaign for America's Future. They put on an annual conference in Washington, D.C. They have a great website, ourfuture.org. Bob, welcome to the program.
How are you?
Great, great. Bob, the positions, I so often these talking heads on TV are talking about how let's take, for example, the liberal Democrat, Nancy Pelosi. As far as I can tell, I can't claim intimate familiarity with Nancy Pelosi's positions. I'm not a scholar of Nancy, and she doesn't represent the district where I live. But I think I know what her positions are broadly. I mean, you know, she's in favor of breaking the links between lobbyists and legislation. She's in favor of enacting the 9/11 Commission suggestion. She's in favor of raising the minimum wage to $7.25 an hour, which is what it is here in Oregon, by the way. And they did a fascinating study, it was in the Wall Street Journal last week, found that raising the minimum wage actually caused people to want to move to Oregon, improved the quality of the workforce. She wants to cut the interest rate on student loans in half. She wants to allow the government to directly negotiate for drug prices. She wants to fund stem cell research with federal funds, and wants to have a pay-as-you-go system so that the deficit doesn't get increased, and middle-class tax relief. Now, these are all called by people like Wolf Blitzer, the radical liberal agenda. It seems to me like this is where America is at. What am I missing here?
You're missing nothing. That is where America is at. But all these things are, you know, two-thirds, 75% popularity, even higher. Minimum wage is higher, probably. And it's not only Pelosi's position. This is a unified Democratic incumbent caucus position. This agenda will pass in the first 100 hours out of a Democratic Congress. If Republicans retain control, none of it will even come to a vote, because if it came to a vote, it would pass through a Republican Congress. It's that popular.
Then how is it, given that Brian Schweitzer, for example, in Montana, here you've got a guy who's a Democrat who won an overwhelming victory. I've talked with him a couple of times since then. An overwhelming victory in that state. He is one of the most progressive Democrats in America, one of the most outspoken. Bernie Sanders. We don't do a lot of guests on this show, and the few that we do typically are conservatives that I argue with. But Bernie has been on this show the first hour of every Friday. The first, we call it Brunch with Bernie, where a congressman comes on who's not a Democrat and not a Republican. That's what appealed to me about it. And he will answer, and all he does is answer listeners' questions. And the thing about Bernie Sanders is he'll tell you what he thinks no matter, you know, he doesn't care whether you like it or not. He'll tell you what he thinks. He'll tell you what's really going on in Congress. And we've been doing that for 3 years on this program, every single Friday. And Bernie wins in Vermont, up in the northern, what's called the Northeast Kingdom, where people drive around with, you know, shotguns in the back of their pickup truck, and there's Bush signs every place, an area that went 70% Bush in the last election. He wins 70-80% margins up there. And yet assuming that he wins the election for the Senate tomorrow, he will be the most progressive senator in the United States Senate. When is the rest of the Democratic Party going to get it that being progressive is where America is at, and this whole DLC New Democrat thing is a disaster for the Democratic Party?
Well, I think that more and more candidates are getting it. Certainly in this election, this is the most populist election, with more candidates sounding closer to Bernie Sanders than to Bob Rubin than we've ever experienced. And I think the sort of Wall Street base of the DLC is increasingly out of step with where most of the Democratic caucus is, and where the party's headed. And that's what's exciting. You're going to see in this election the election not just of Sanders, but hopefully of Sherrod Brown and Amy Klobuchar and John Tester in Montana. These are real populist progressives who will change the conversation in the Senate and change the nature of that caucus up there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and hopefully across the House as well.
It's one of the things that I think has gotten very little attention in this election, which is sort of extraordinary to me. One is that Democrats started out being very wary about the war, as you know, and they've ended up with the DCCC and the Democratic National Committee and others buying ads, painting Republicans as tied to Bush on a stay-the-course policy in Iraq, which is a disaster. That's really unprecedented in modern elections in this century, even during the Vietnam period, where you have a war going on and a party benefiting by campaigning against it. And the same thing on economics. Democrats have been more populist about these basic bread-and-butter issues that you just mentioned than they have in any other election, certainly in my experience, and they are benefiting overwhelmingly from that. In fact, many Republicans are trying to paint themselves as on the same agenda.
Right, as it is essentially anti-Bush. We're talking about Bob Borisage. He's the president of the Institute for America's Future, a co-director of its sister organization, the Campaign for America's Future, ourfuture.org, the website. One of the progressive think tanks, organizations out there doing some really great work. Bob, what do we do? How should there be a purge within the Democratic Party? I mean, you've got like Rahm Emanuel. He's a DLC all the way, you know, in the pocket of the corporations, in my opinion, at least from his positions. And he's the guy who's been making the decisions for the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. And up until now, he's been throwing money at the conservative Democratic candidates, and rather than the progressive ones, by and large.
Rahm will come out of this election if Democrats win, with a great deal of power, because there will be a lot of freshman members who will be quite thankful for the help he gave them. And so this is going to be a fight generally over the next period of time. But the reality is that Pelosi really understands this, I think, better than most Democrats. And the new chairs of these committees tend to be very progressive Democrats in the House. And so I think And then, of course, you have the building of the base with MoveOn.org and the unions doing remarkable heavy lifting in this election. So I think you'll see the party move in the right way.
Now, what if the Republicans, what if these millions of robocalls that are happening right now, what if the massive voter disenfranchisement, what if their efforts to essentially steal another election are successful?
Well, then it's going to be a bloodbath on the Democratic side. I think Pelosi's leadership will be challenged from the right in those conditions. I think you'll see the DLC and others who are trying to claim victory now immediately blaming defeat on the progressive side of the party, and it'll be a Donnybrook.
Yeah, and Joe Lieberman, you know, the ultimate DLC Democrat, becoming a Republican?
Well, who knows what Lieberman will do? He'll do whatever's in his personal interest if he gets reelected. But what's interesting about that race, you know, is here is a guy who was the vice presidential candidate, rebuked by his own party for being a lapdog for Bush. It was quite extraordinary victory by Ned Lamont in the primary.
But I think what's happened is that Americans, even though they don't realize it at the level of political strategy or analysis, are getting it that the only reason that Bill Clinton won two elections was not because his policies were consistent and congruent with those of the American people. Most Americans were opposed to NAFTA and GATT and all these free trade craziness and a lot of these things, but because he was just a natural politician. I mean, Democrats were losing office all over the country following his policies.
Well, he was a great politician. He never got 50% of the vote. He had the advantage of Ross Perot in that race.
That's true.
But remember how Clinton ran. You know, when he ran in 92, he ran on national health care, increased taxes on the rich, invest in the cities, invest in education. It was a pretty populist agenda. It wasn't, I'm going to pass NAFTA, and he governed like that, but he didn't run like that.
So he ran as a progressive, and he became a conservative.
Right, and when he ran in 96, it was on M2E2, Medicare, Medicaid, the environment, and education against Bob Dole. So he was a populist in that race, too.
Huh, interesting. Bob Borisage, the Institute for America's Future and the Campaign for America's Future, ourfuture.org, the website. Bob, good talking with you.
Take care.
Thanks for coming on. 16 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. And we'll be back in just a moment.
Now, I might be old-fashioned, but I believe it's true that folks around the world are pretty much like me and you. I have a silly notion if we want them to be friends, they prefer that we don't torture them. But I'm a liberal.
He's a liberal.
I'm a liberal.
Unforgivable.
I'm a liberal.
He's a liberal.
I'm a liberal.
He's your typical liberal.
And helping you win the water cooler wars, Tom Hartman here with you, 21 minutes past the hour. Mark Ritchie on the line with us. He's running for Secretary of State in Minnesota. These are really important races, the Secretary of State races. They're the folks who run the elections in most cases. Mark Ritchie, 06.net, R-I-T-C-H-I-E, 06.net is Mark Ritchie's website. And Mark Ritchie, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Great. Thanks for having me on, Tom.
I understand that Minneapolis is on the edge of passing instant runoff voting and that you support that statewide.
Yes. Well, we have a big committee here in Minneapolis, and what we're saying is we want to experiment in our hometown, Minneapolis, find out how it really works for us here in Minnesota. We have many different kinds of elections, so we're starting with our biggest city. I think it's going to be a big success, and we'll use that success to really shape it then for other elections.
Yeah, well, it's worked well in Australia for the better part of 15 years, maybe a little longer in New Zealand. It works well in San Francisco, so I would think that it would work well there.
Yeah,
we have over 300 communities. Over 300 communities in the United States now that have instant runoff voting. So what's the basis of your campaign, Mark Ritchie? Mark Ritchie, 06.net.
Well, in the last election in 2004, I led the November 2nd, the National Voice campaign. We registered 5 million people. But every week we had to fight with Secretary of State offices in Florida and in Ohio, New Mexico, and right here in my home state of Minnesota. So after that election, I decided that if we're really going to have free and fair elections, we had to have a new Secretary of State, somebody committed to making it easier for people to vote, not trying to keep people out, make it possible for everyone to be able to run for office if they want to, not try to kick people off the ballot. So I decided it was time to challenge our current Secretary of State and to defeat her at the polls.
Mark Ritchie, Paul Weyrich is probably the leading Republican strategist and certainly one of the most long time. He claims credit for Reagan's victory. He is working very aggressively on this campaign. He's the, one of the major powers behind the throne at the White House. And this is something that he said recently in, actually it wasn't recently, it was about 10 years ago, in a church to a group of Republican activists who are in this church to get together to talk about Republican political strategy. This is Paul Weyrich.
Now many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
That's the official Republican strategy, Mark Ritchie. What would you do to respond to that, as it were?
Well, in Minnesota, the head of our Republican Party said he wanted to make Minnesota the Ohio of 2006. By that, he means the kind of vote suppression, the kind of intimidation, the kind of deceptive practices. I mean, what we have to do is first be vigilant at the level of every citizen. Our citizens need to know their rights, and they need to have the courage to stand up for their rights, each as an individual. But then we need our civil society groups, our nonprofits, our community organizations to know our collective rights and to fight for them. And then we need election officials from township to town to county to secretaries of state who are committed to making sure that everybody has the opportunity to vote with ease and dignity and everyone feels welcome to vote, not just able to vote.
Including Republicans.
Including libertarians, including our members
right.
of the independents, the
right.
Greens.
Right across the board.
Everybody.
Okay, Mark Ritchie, 06, RITCHIE, 06.net, the website. Mark Ritchie, Mark, good luck.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, and thanks for being on the program.
Talk to you again soon. Bye now.
Good talking with you. It's great. A Republican, or excuse me, a candidate for the Secretary of State's office in the great state of Minnesota. Bob Bowman is running for Congress in Florida. Bowman2006.com, his website. Bob, we got about a minute. You want to give a quick pitch for your candidacy?
Well, I'm one of these progressive populist Democrats that is running, not getting a penny of help from the Democratic Party, but I've got a real grassroots dynamo here.
You're too progressive for Rahm Emanuel?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And you're running against?
I'm running against Dave Weldon, a Bushy Republican incumbent who came in 94 running on term limits and is
still there.
Still there, running for his seventh term and using all the dirty tricks that you've been talking about today, push polling, distorting.
Did you get a push poll? Have you heard a push poll? Have you received any?
Absolutely. I've even got it myself.
You're kidding. You got push polled about yourself?
Yeah. And
we only have about 20 seconds. What'd they say?
Well, you know, would you be more or less inclined to vote for Bob Bowman if you knew that? And then a bunch of stuff that he supports gay marriage, that he wants to cut our troops, that he wants to cut and run from Iraq, that he wants to do this, most of which are horrendous distortions that he wants to take your guns away where I've said,
yeah, that's not your position.
Put
Bob
my
Bowman,
life on the line for it.
Right. You're a vet, in fact, a vet running for Congress in Florida. Bowman, B-O-W-M-A-N, 2006.com, the website. Bob, good luck in your race.
Hey, thank you very much, Tom.
Good talking with you. 27 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with your calls and more right after this. 27 minutes past the hour on the True People's Radio, the Tom Hartman Program.
Because we get around
talking about my generation.
Well, DJ Julie Goffin
talking about my generation.
I might die before I get old
talking about my generation.
And welcome back for your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. TomHartman.com if you want to drop into our live chat room. 1-866-440-THOM. Our telephone number, 440-8466, Prez in San Francisco, California, listening on the Quake. Hey, Prez, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I want to really thank you first and foremost for repeating something I've been trying to tell people. The Republicans don't trust human nature. They think we're all evil and need to be controlled.
Well, this has been the fundamental dispute between conservatives and progressives, or between conservatives and liberals, since the Enlightenment. I mean, this was the big thing. You know, you could argue that actually this goes back to the founding of all the world's major religions, but, you know, I'll set that one aside for the moment. But during the Enlightenment, the period of the 1600s in Europe, when Jean-Jacques Rousseau was writing about the noble savage and John Locke was writing about, you know, the ability of people to govern themselves, that was predicated on the assumption that the essential nature of humans is good and that social systems or economic systems can be bad or dysfunctional and produce bad behavior, as Victorian England saw. On the other hand, you had conservatives like Thomas Hobbes, who in Leviathan said that without the restraining iron force, is the phrase he used, without the restraining iron force of either government or religion, that people would devolve to their natural, sinful, evil nature, and life would be as he believed it was for all primitive people, or quote, civilized people, nasty, brutish, and short.
And
he was wrong. And that's what the children of the Renaissance, the founding fathers of this country, and mothers, by the way, there were many women involved in it as well, not as visibly, but they were certainly there. But particularly Jefferson and Jay and Madison and Washington and Ben Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, his father was a surveyor, traveled all over Western Virginia throughout his childhood. His father died when he was, as I recall, 14. But up until that point in time, he got to know many of the Native American tribes. I opened my book, What Would Jefferson Do?, with the whole story of Jefferson being there with one of his heroes, a Native American leader who was going off to negotiate with King George in England. And Jefferson got it that the Native Americans believed, particularly the Iroquois, believed that the essential nature of humans was good. In fact, it's really fascinating. My book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, I talk about this. One of the major problems that the Christian evangelists had in the 1700s and the early 1800s in the United States, trying to evangelize the Indians, Native Americans, was that they couldn't convince them that they were guilty of original sin, that God hated them simply because they were born of a woman.
Yeah.
And so anyhow, you got me started on a rant there. I'm sorry, Prez.
I'm glad to hear it. I'm really glad to hear it. The people need to hear this stuff. And that's the problem that I run into all the time. I try to tell people that what you believe is not what you know.
Yeah.
And that's why they get so defensive and angry about it.
Yeah.
But I wanted to comment today on the, I saw on the news last night, they say the polls are tightening.
Yes.
That, to me, is a big warning sign. I think they could be getting ready to hose us yet again.
Yeah, it's the disinformation campaign cranking up.
Yeah, I believe it is. And another thing on elections. There's no reason why we can't wait a day or two. I don't know why the big push is. We need to know right now.
Yeah, we used to.
Why can't we wait a few days? In Canada, they count everything by hand. What does it take, like about 8 hours or something?
They typically know in Canada by 2 hours after the polls close, but they start the counting process, you know, as soon as they start the voting process. So they're and the same in Europe. When I lived in Germany in 86, 87, you know, an election in Germany, typically they know, first of all, they know the results of the election within 1 minute of the closing of the polls because they do exit polls.
Mm-hmm.
And the exit polls since the 1950s, when they started doing them, the early 1950s, you know, when the German Republic really started coming together under the Marshall Plan, they have never been more than 0.1% off.
Well, the same in this country, too. Internationally, that's the same stat, basically.
Yeah,
isn't it?
And exit polls in this country have always been accurate until George Bush ran for office.
Yeah, and in Ohio recently, they struck down that law saying that they couldn't do exit polling. That was finally struck down a few weeks ago.
Right.
I remember
a little
reading,
late to be of any value.
Which is a very small, you know, that's a small victory. We'll see how much it works out. But I wanted to make another comment kind of in this area about the Supreme Court decision in 2000, Bush v. Gore.
Yeah.
They legally had no standing to even hear that case.
That's right.
And that's something that people forget about. And, you know, the Supremes can be impeached for not acting, quote, in good behavior.
Yeah, although
of course, Rehnquist, you know, who's going to do that, right?
Well, plus it was Rehnquist's choice to take the case. And Scalia and Rehnquist both had family members who were working on the Bush campaign. I mean, there are some serious issues there. Plus, they said, and they acknowledged this for all practical purposes, they said in that ruling that this ruling does not establish precedent. This cannot be used for anything else. This is a standalone, single exception.
For this candidate only at this time, which is They can't do that anyway. That's,
right. And
illegal.
They can do anything they want. It just it may not withstand future scrutiny by the court. But then they also went on to say that the basis of their ruling was that if every single vote was counted in Florida, as the Florida Supreme Court had ordered, because what they did basically was they overturned the Florida Supreme Court.
Right.
If every vote was counted, it would cause, quote, irreparable harm, unquote, to plaintiff George Bush. Yeah. And it's like, man, that's terrible. Prez, I got to move along. I appreciate the call. Thanks very much for listening to us there on the Quake. Virginia in Seattle. Hey, Virginia, what's up? Virginia? No, Virginia. We'll put her on hold and come back to her. Ravi in Chile, New Mexico. Hey, Ravi, what's on your mind today?
Oh, hey, Tom. Boy, did you light a fire under me today.
Oh, yeah?
Being in New Mexico. I called the Democratic Party about the robocalling.
Yeah.
And they are in court this morning with getting an injunction.
That's great. In New Hampshire, they actually were able to stop the Republican Party today. I mean, the damage had been done. They were able to stop them because New Hampshire has a state law against using the Do Not Call list. But federally, the Do Not Call list has this exception for politicians and for nonprofits. And so, you know, outside of New Hampshire, it's a little more problematic.
Well, I started with the Democratic Party. I told them I didn't think this was a political prank, that I thought it was fraud worth millions of dollars.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And these things are mostly, my understanding is they're coming out of Ohio. There's one guy, a multimillionaire, who's financing them. And, it's swift vote all over again. This is, you know, in the last 3 days before the election, portraying implying that the calls are coming from Democrats. And by the way, we're going to call you, you know, every hour, all night long, so you get no sleep. You think you're going to vote for that candidate the next day? I don't think so. And suddenly we're seeing the polls change, and everybody's going, gee, I wonder why the polls are changing. Well, mainstream media, why don't you report on the fact that there is an illegal, certainly immoral, wrong, nationwide, deceptive campaign being perpetrated, a multi-million-dollar campaign, hundreds of thousands at the very least, possibly millions of calls being placed in states all over the United States in every battleground district to that is wrong. It's false. Robbie,
well,
thanks for the call. I got to move along. Don in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Don, thanks for listening to WPTT. What's up?
Hey, Tom, thanks for getting onto the air. I appreciate being in the Democracy Zone. It's such a busy time of the year.
It is, isn't it? It's a wild one.
Hey, I have an observation, and then I'd like to tell you my take on something. By the way, I read your book, and it's terrific.
Thank you.
The book I read was the Screwed book.
The most recent one.
I've been working in the mill for 33 years, and I don't very often get the chance to keep up with the newspapers, let alone read a lot of books, but I've been recuperating from some surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a chance to do quite a bit of reading, so I find that book just sensational.
Thank you.
Anyway, my observation was yesterday on Meet the Press I was watching, and Elizabeth Dole was on there, and I just found her performance on the program, a thumbnail sketch, kind of a microcosm of Republican, the upper echelon Republican leadership. She continued to talk over top of all the other panelists and even the moderator, Tim Russert.
Yes, I saw it.
And I just found it so representative of what the upper echelon Republican leadership is like today. And I say upper echelon because I do believe there are good Republicans out there. I still disagree with their policies and their ideology in general, but I still believe there are certainly good people out there. But I find Elizabeth Dole, she just would not listen. She wouldn't stop talking and wouldn't listen to the other people who were on the program, and even Tim Russert. I can't believe that he kept his cool as well as he did. But he did try to interrupt her a number of times, and she continued to make her point and make her point ad infinitum. And you know, it was just so representative.
Yeah, it was frankly disgusting. My brother-in-law was visiting, and he was telling us how my mother-in-law, my wife's mother, had earlier in the day seen that because we were watching it in the evening, and he said she was yelling at the TV. You know, so that's the way it is. Don, thanks a lot for the call. Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan, listening on WTKG Clear Channel in Grand Rapids. Hey, Rick.
Hi, Tom. Hello from God's country and an area that you know well.
Indeed. The town that I was born in fact.
That's right. A couple of things. I have two quick questions for you, but my first comment, you know that Vic DeVos, the heir to the Amway fortune, is running for the governorship.
I know it well, yeah. I'm trying to buy the governorship, you mean.
And the latest poll is that he's losing by 13 percentage points.
Good.
So, and here in Western Michigan, it's been surprising. He's been taking a lot of credit for a lot of improvements here in Western Michigan. Funny thing is, even diehard Republicans I know saying, what is the man saying? He didn't do that. His parents did.
Well, so, didn't he ship a bunch of jobs off, like several thousand jobs offshore?
Yep.
Yeah, that's Dick DeVos. The Republicans... You know, sometimes, occasionally, they talk a good game, but then when you get down to what's actually going on, what the policies are that they're pursuing,
right.
that they're promoting, it's just, they're just, you know, not right for America.
Two quick questions. Is Bernie Sanders going to be on even after he's elected senator?
He says he will, yeah.
Okay, and my other question is, I'll listen to your answer maybe after the break, Tom. Why the Democrats have not made a big issue about this Medicare Part D, where the U.S. government can...
Okay, I got it, Rick. I'll address that right after the break. Right now, yeah, it's 45 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back.
San Francisco days, San Francisco nights. I met a girl in Mexico and should have told her then, I know. But I still think of you. We never will be through. San Francisco days, San Francisco nights.
And welcome back to Tom Hartman Radio Program, where despair is not an option. Get active, my friends. 1-866-440-8466, our number. Cher in Seattle, Washington. I'm listening on Talk 1090 in Seattle. Hey, Cher.
Hello?
Hello.
Oh, it is me. Okay.
It is you.
I called because I heard that pollers were going to be sequestered. And are being sequestered, and that, so that they can match the exit. I'm talking about exit polls.
Mm-hmm.
So that they can match the
few
polls
that are happening.
The totals of the votes.
Yeah. Well, that's what happened last year. You know, the exit polls were showing right up until, a little after midnight on election night. What was it, November 7th, I think, last year. Or November 2nd, rather. Not last year. Last election, two years ago. Right up until midnight, the exit polls were showing that John Kerry had beat George W. Bush by about 5 million votes. And it's fascinating to see the screenshots, the old CNN screenshots. They're still floating around the Internet. What happened was that after the voting machines came in and said, no, sorry, the exit polls apparently are wrong. Bush won by 3 million rather than Kerry winning by 5 million. There's an 8 million vote difference. Those exit polls got recalibrated. They recalibrated them, and I'm sure they'll do the same thing.
They're
again.
Doing it again, so they aren't using. So we won't have any exit polls, which are what we really should be going by.
I agree. Sheriff, thanks for the call and for pointing that out. Victoria Jones is with us, our correspondent from Washington D.C., the Talk Radio News Service in Washington D.C., TalkRadioNews.com. Victoria, what's happening in Washington D.C.? Is D.C. all abuzz about the push polls and these extraordinarily unethical phone calls, robocalls that the Republicans are making all over the country, like we are?
They're probably not as upset as you are because 50% of Washington probably is involved in them. So
I see. You're right. 51% maybe right now.
Right, exactly. But they are concerned about them. They're also concerned about voting machines. I'm hearing a great deal about voting machines, actually.
Oh, really?
Yes, a great deal about voting machines and a certain amount about untrained poll workers as well.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the concerns. And also a lot of people trying to figure out what the most recent polls mean and whether they actually do mean anything, whether the tightening up of the polls yesterday means anything when the polls today showed the Democrats breaking away again.
Interesting. So the tightening up may have been the result of what? Could it have been the robocalls? Could it have been just weird polling? Could it have been the news cycle of the day?
It could have been the news cycle of the day. It could have been that they polled different people. It could have been that the questions were asked slightly differently. It's not clear.
Yeah.
It's not clear why. It's clear that it happened.
Could it have been that there were partisans among the polling companies trying to spin the polls?
It's possible, but it's the same reputable polling companies that have been doing all the polling that have been used.
Right, so that's probably the least likely explanation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a mystery.
Yeah. What's the, there was Peter King back in the last election, the Congressman Peter King had his moment in the sun, his famous saying that, it's all over but the counting and we'll take care of that or words to that effect, as I recall. In fact, actually, here he is saying it. Hang on just a second.
It's already over. The election's over. We won.
How do you know that?
It's all over with the county. We'll take care of the county.
It's all over by the county, and we'll take care of the county. Now, he was rather drunk when he said this, but it was about 1 o'clock in the afternoon on Election Day 2 years ago.
That's astonishing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all over by the county, and we'll take care of the county. Now, you know, you think that's going to happen again?
I don't think that's going to happen again. I think there are too many people. There are the ACLU and other organizations have got so many lawyers at so many precincts standing by waiting for the slightest complaint that I think it's going to be really, really difficult to do anything particularly naughty this year. I think it's going to be very hard to get away with very much.
Hmm. Well, you know, from your lips to God's ears, let's hope that that's the case. They're already doing it with these robocalls. I mean,
the robocalls, and I'm sure that you know, I remember last time there were these in Baltimore, I think it was, they were telling people that the voting date had been changed to Wednesday.
That's right. And in Ohio, they were telling them to vote in different districts. That's happening in New Mexico right now. We have a record of people being called in New Mexico by the Republican Party, being told that their polling place had changed. And, in fact, it had not changed. So they would have shown up at the wrong polling place, stood in line for 5 hours, and then been told to go someplace else. That's a nice strategy.
That's great.
In fact, this guy believes the pattern that seems to be emerging is that they're calling people with Hispanic surnames in New Mexico, which is a not insignificant portion of the population, and telling them that, or registered Democrats. So
that's astounding.
Yeah, here, another one. This is from the New York Times. An automated voice at the other end of the telephone line asks whether you believe judges who push homosexual marriage and create new rights like abortion and sodomy should be controlled. If your reply is yes, the voice says that the Democratic candidate, John Tester, is not your man. Same thing going on in Maryland. The same thing. I mean, this is happening all over the country. I mean, we're getting reports from all over the country that these push polls are happening in Philadelphia, in Kansas, in New Hampshire, in Connecticut, in New York, in New Mexico. How can this be stopped?
They'd have to pass a law about push polling, and I think it would be terribly difficult to do because it's a matter of free speech. But it would have to come under some kind of solicitation. It would have to have something to do with solicitation to buy or to sell or something like that.
Well, in New Hampshire, the state has passed a law about using the do not call list. So at least in New Hampshire, they're not calling the do not call list any longer.
That's the only way to do it. Then everybody needs to get on that do not call list.
Except that federally, there's an exception for politicians and nonprofits.
Oh, God. Well, we need to get that changed.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service in Washington, D.C., talkradionews.com. Thanks, Victoria.
Thank you.
Good talking with you. 56 minutes past the hour. Coming up after the news. Well, after the news, we'll be taking your calls and covering more of what's happening with the elections. And, is it possible that the United States could end up going down the same road that the Soviet Union did and Nazi Germany did, that you can't leave the country without the permission of the Bush administration? Incredible. I'll tell you about it after the news. 57 minutes past.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, it's already happened once. Welcome back to the radio support group of, by, and for we, the people of the United States of America, the Tom Hartman radio program. It's already happened once. Earlier this year, the Department of Homeland Security, and I got to tell you, every time I hear that word homeland, it just absolutely creeps me out. Because, I mean, we never used that word in the United States. Adolf Hitler, when he and Rudolf Hess were conspiring, was a big student of the Zionist movement in Europe in the late 1800s. And he thought, you know, that Germany should come up with this idea of a national identity, too. The Germans should create a homeland. And the word homeland had never been used in Germany. Heimat is the German word, Heimat. And it's in 1934 at the Nuremberg Rally. Rudolf Hess introduced the word homeland for the first time in a big way into the German vocabulary, into the German political discourse. Here he is.
Dank Ihrer Führung.
Thanks to your leadership.
Wird Deutschland sein Ziel erreichen. Heimat zu sein.
Now Germany is becoming the homeland for all the Germans in the world.
Heimat zu sein für alle Deutschen der Welt.
So anyhow, the Department of Homeland Security has already forbidden an airline from carrying an 18-year-old native-born U.S. citizen back to the United States. There's a discussion now at the Department of Homeland Security, the beginning on January 14th of next year. You will not be allowed to leave the United States unless your documents are in order and you have the permission of the Department of Homeland Security. We'll see how that goes. Meanwhile, the war in Iraq continues to disintegrate, and Saddam Hussein is convicted. Larry Everett wrote a book that was published by Common Courage Press called Oil, Power, and Empire. Larry Everest, EVEREST.com, his website, if you want more information about Iraq and the U.S. global agenda. Larry, we just spoke an email yesterday. I asked you to come on the program and talk about this because there's a chapter in your book that's just mind-boggling. Welcome to the program, first of all.
Oh, good to be with you, Tom.
Thank you, Larry. In the fourth chapter of your book, it's about the Iran-Iraq War. You're talking about 2003, which is the period of time during which Saddam Hussein was engaged in both the war with Iran and the crime for which he was convicted and given the death sentence yesterday, which, of course, is the major talking point for the Republicans and the mainstream media today, which obviously was the plan of the administration all along. And Tony Snow basically said so a week ago when he said, yes, we intend to use this. Tell us about what was going on. Is the United States, here's the bottom line. Saddam Hussein was just convicted of murdering some Iraqi civilians who had tried to assassinate him, and so he took them out, basically. Terrible thing. He murdered a lot of people who probably had nothing to do with the assassination attempt whatsoever. It deserves to be prosecuted and convicted. Was the United States complicit in that?
Well, it's interesting, Tom, because they chose one of the actions that they were not directly complicit in while ignoring the much larger and more serious crimes of the massacres of Kurdish people, which they were directly complicit in. I mean, it's very interesting, this massacre in Dujail, a Shia town in central Iraq, took place after an assassination attempt in July of 1982. It turns out that a month earlier, in June 1982, Ronald Reagan signed a secret directive encouraging the United States to use all means at its disposal to make sure that Saddam Hussein did not lose the Iran-Iraq war. At that time, this is like deja vu all over again, because at that time the United States in 1980 under Zbigniew Brzezinski had actually encouraged an Iraqi invasion, an attack on Iran, which of course could also be something Saddam could be tried for, which would also include U.S. involvement in it. They had encouraged this to do what? To weaken the Islamic Republic of Iran, the same objectives that the Bush administration is still trying to pursue. But the war hadn't gone as planned. Does that sound familiar? Iran-Iraq war hadn't gone as planned. Iraq was threatened with losing the war, so the U.S. began more directly and openly helping Iraq. Donald Rumsfeld visited twice in 1983 and 1984. The U.S. facilitated military supplies, including chemical and biological weapons. And most devastatingly, the U.S. actually helped Iraq calibrate and use U.S. intelligence to direct its chemical attacks, including against the Kurds. So this is just monstrous hypocrisy.
So when the Republicans talk about Saddam gassing the Kurds, it was the United States who directed that?
Well, they were complicit and involved in that. One of the things the United States had done was number one, it had provided Iraq with intelligence. This was documented by Bob Woodward. Scott Ritter, who was a UN weapons inspector, has verified this, that one of the things the U.S. did was give Iraq satellite photos of where Iranian troop positions were, and of course some of them were in Kurdistan and so on. So
this is during the Reagan-Bush administration.
Exactly, that's right. And so the Iraqis used that intelligence, as Woodward put it, to, quote, calibrate their gas attacks. And one of the top Iraqi officials told Scott Ritter that the U.S. advisors were sitting in the same room when these attacks were planned. And this was part of a broader program that the United States had. The United States did not want Saddam Hussein to lose that war. And in fact, a national security directive made very clear that the United States would not, and this is a quote, would not oppose Iraq's legitimate attempts to suppress the Kurdish rebellion. So once these attacks were going on, which took place, the biggest ones against the Kurds took place in 1988, the United States, there were some resolutions in the Congress and some words of, criticism raised, but when it came time to sanction or punish Iraq, the Reagan-Bush administration refused to do that and, in fact, doubled aid to Iraq. Again, this was all part of a very calculated geopolitical strategy to use Iraq and Saddam Hussein as a bulwark against Iran.
Which brings us not just against Iran, though. It was also to establish a footprint in the Middle East where there was oil.
Exactly.
And Iraq, I mean, Dick Cheney made the point. Here he is.
Iraq sits on top of 10% of world's oil reserves. Very significant reserve, second only to Saudi Arabia.
And when we attack Iraq, when Bush went on TV and made the announcement that we were about to attack Iraq, he said, and now I'd like to speak to the Iraqi people. And I'm sitting there watching the TV expecting him to say something like, we know that you don't want your kids to die. We don't want our kids to die. Why don't you just lay down your weapons? We're the mightiest war machine in the world. You're toast. We'll treat your prisoners well. Just give up. And instead, what he said was,
your fate will depend on your actions. Do not destroy oil wells.
And all over the world, people's jaws dropped.
Yeah, no, exactly. Bush has finally resumed talking about oil. He's so desperate. Just the other day he mentioned it. But this has been at the heart of the struggle over Iraq for decades. And, the U.S. collaboration with the Ba'ath Party and Saddam Hussein goes back to 1963 when the United States and the CIA actually helped the Ba'ath Party come to power. They orchestrated, gave them lists of communists and leftists and Democrats, intellectuals, and so on, which the Ba'ath Party in 1963 proceeded to massacre. The U.S. helped the Ba'ath further consolidate power, sent over the Treasury Secretary Robert Anderson in 1968 under the Johnson administration.
This is something that goes way back. I mean, Jimmy Carter in 79 was trying to, put into place processes to eliminate the need by the year 2000 for imported oil. Ronald Reagan did away with that. He said, there's no problem with imported oil. In fact, took down Jimmy Carter's solar collectors off the roof of the White House. Had we followed Carter's lead rather than Reagan's lead, had we stopped embracing this dictator in Iraq, had we simply just, walked away from it, odds are we wouldn't be in this war right now.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the U.S. problem with Saddam Hussein has never been his tyranny. That's why he was put in power in the first place, to suppress the population, hold that state together. And the conflicts have come up because Saddam Hussein's agenda was in conflict with the United States in a certain way, and that he wanted more control of his own oil.
Larry Everest, LarryEverest.com, the website, the book Oil, People, and Power. We're going to do our, thanks, Larry. We're going to do our progressive pop quiz real quickly. In the last days of the election, the Republicans are using what deceptive technique? Sixth caller gets a free copy of Truth.
My cup.
country, tis of thee. But that is what you'll be if you stand in the way of Cheney's war machine. Osama bin Laden, man, where you been? We couldn't find you, so we just went the other way. Go figure. Now we're doing the Bush and Cheney shuffle. A twist on this and a spin on that. I don't believe a single word they say. They just sit around and make up lies all day.
And welcome back. Tom Harbin here with you. The Tom Harbin radio program, where reason is our lifestyle choice. 22 minutes past the hour. By the way, we have a winner in our progressive pop quiz. Our question, in the last days of the election, that is, you know, today, the Republicans are using what deceptive technique? And congratulations to Don Shortman in Ferndale, California. He knew, there you go, Don. Good on you. He knew that the answer is push polling and variations thereof, you know, phony polls and all this kind of thing. And they're using it to apparently some great advantage. Karen Ackerman is with us with the AFL-CIO. Karen, welcome to the Tom Harbin program.
Thank you very much.
Tell me what is up right now with the, you're the political director of the AFL-CIO, AFLCIO.org is the website. And what do you see playing out right now?
What do we what?
What do you see playing out right now in the elections?
Well, I think that there's no doubt that these races are closing, that it's getting, that what we all knew is that many, many of these races, the House races and the Senate races around the country, in the closing hours to the election will be tight. And,
why?
Why? Because, in fact, in terms of voting, many of these, of the races, have, as we saw in the presidential, there are, you know, relatively equal numbers of folks voting Democrat and Republican. We've seen this in the presidential in 2000 and then again in 2004. So it's not surprising. In 1994, 15 of the closest races that Republicans won from Democrats were won by 6,000 votes or less. So we know that many, many of these races around the country are going to be very tight and maybe won or lost by less than 5,000 votes.
5,000 votes per district. And that might be why the GOP is literally making millions of robocalls right now, deceptive robocalls to people in districts all over the United States. Now, to combat that, to help bring about a victory here, the AFL-CIO for working people in the United States, the AFL-CIO is in the middle of its final four get-out-the-vote push. Tell us about that.
Well, yes, we have a huge push to reach out to union voters. Across the country, we're engaged in well over 200 different races. We are talking to 13.5 million union voters in this country. And so we are spending these last final 4 days really doing a huge push, getting information out to people where they work, union voters where they work, where there are union shops. Talking to union voters house by house, making many, many phone calls, union member to union voter. So we have a huge push to make sure that we get the union vote out.
Karen, if after the election, the Republicans hold the House and Senate, and it starts coming out that what they did in New Hampshire 2 years ago, where they were slamming the phone banks and these, scam, robocalls, and in New Mexico, people are being called and told that registered Democrats are being called and told that their voting place has changed, that they should go someplace else. And then, of course, it's the wrong place, and so their vote won't get counted. They'll have to stand in line to be told that you're in the wrong line. You should be in another line. And this is like the obvious stuff. Not to mention the caging, the purging of what it was over 100,000 people in Ohio in the last race, 80,000 people in Florida in the 2000 race. We're seeing that happening all over the United States. If if when the election is over and if the Republicans continue to hold power, and there is considerable evidence that the Republicans did this by virtue of vote suppression, either illegally or at the very least immorally, is organized labor going to respond?
Well, I think we would certainly be as outraged as all folks who take the time and effort and interest to vote in this election and all working people. And we would, in the AFL-CIO, we do have a voter protection program in a dozen states where we're out in about 25 cities. With volunteers, union volunteers at the polls. We have an 800 number and,
what is that 800 number?
I'll have to find that for you.
Okay.
It's 1-800, vote. It's very important that folks, call, League of Women Voters or other, groups that, if they find that there are serious problems at the work site, there will be many, many organizations out at the key polling place.
And I'm guessing people could track this down at AFLCIO.org.
That's exactly right.
Okay. Karen Ackerman, the political director of the AFL-CIO, AFLCIO.org, the website, the final get-out-the-vote push happening here. Karen, good on you. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thanks for being with us. 27 minutes past there. We'll be back with news and your calls right after this.
Me and my gang. Daisy Duke Denim, banging on gongs and singing our songs. Dude named Del Rod jamming on an iPod. Beer and bonfires, wide open throttle, cores in a bottle.
And welcome back. Viagra for your brain. It's the Tom Harlan radio program. Just don't tell Limbaugh, he'll want some. Welcome back to our program. Listener-supported radio, by the way, supported by, you. Supporting our sponsors. I mean, that's how it works in commercial radio. It's actually supported by our listeners, supporting our sponsors. Please support the sponsors you hear on our local stations. They're perhaps the most important of this whole thing. And also our national sponsors. For example, Sacred Grounds Coffee, saving the planet one cup at a time. 1-800-425-2532, sacredgroundscoffee.com. And this is their website. All fair trade, all organic, and some just coffees you've never had, like you've never had in your life. Some great stuff. And Small Dog Electronics. Get the latest iPods now. 1-800-511-MAX, smalldog.com. And the organic wine company, ecowine.com, 1-888-ECOWINE. Welcome back to the program. Tom Hartman here with you. It was published in July. It's only been noticed in the last month or so. The Department of Homeland Security. Now, I remember I lived in Germany for a year, and the place I was living in a town called Stadtsteinach, and there was another town, Hörheim, which was down the road, I don't know, maybe 70, 80 miles away, which was right literally the farm, this organization that I was working with, an international relief organization called Kinder und Jugendhilfswerk Salem, when Louise and I and our three kids lived there. They owned both these facilities. And the Hörheim property, the back end of the property, it was a farm. The back end of the farm literally was the East German border. It was this 20-foot-tall, razor-wire-topped, barbed wire fence, or chain-link fence, rather. And there was two fences with about a 20-foot strip between them that was sand. And a road on the East German side where the Jeeps could travel, and every couple of hundred yards there was these giant concrete towers where at the top, if you walked along the road, the machine guns would point at you. And the East German border actually extended about 10 feet over on the West German side of the fence, and they had put landmines there. So you knew not to get out of the car and walk on that nice, pleasant-looking grass or field. You know, it was wild. Because it would blow up. And I remember in the spring when the snow was melting, the landmines would just spontaneously explode as the sun warmed the soil. Well, that's a fence that works. And as the Bush administration is trying to build a fence that works down in Mexico, we're all sitting around going, yeah, this is going to keep the Mexicans out. But what if it's designed like the East German fence to keep the Americans in? Say, what? You see The Sound of Music, the movie, The Sound of Music, the Von Trapp family? When I lived in Vermont, the Von Trapp family, I mean, they came here to the United States. Where'd they go? They ended up in Vermont. And they built a ski lodge in Stowe. Beautiful place. I've been there. And, I mean, this is, in the movie, the big dramatic moment is, are they going to be able to escape from Austria, from the German-controlled territory? Because you couldn't leave without the permission of the government. Well, this was published in the Federal Register, 71 Federal Register 40035-40048 on July 14, 2006, docket number USCPB 2005-0003-0003. And what it says, this is just a very small change about the Bureau of Customs and Border Protection, the CBP, proposing a regulatory change. And you can read about this, by the way, over at papersplease.org. They have a link to the whole thing under the headline, Mother May I. What they want to do, what this government is proposing, is that before you can leave the United States, you must have the permission of the Department of Homeland Security. And if this is not stopped, my read of this, and I may be wrong, but I don't think so. There's a 32-page PDF over there at that website if you want to, from the Identity Project, papersplease.org. On the 17th of January 2007, which is what, 2 months from now, more or less, you have to, no vessel that is leaving this country, cruise ship, even ferries, planes, cruise ships, whatever, can take people out of the United States without the permission of the Department of Homeland Security. May they see your papers, please. See, right now, I can go out to the airport and I can get on a plane to Europe. I can get on a plane to anywhere. And I don't have to present, I have to present ID to the airline to show that I'm really me, but I don't have to have the permission of my government. Now, the airline won't let me on the plane without a passport because they know that if they land in England or Germany or Venezuela or whatever, that country won't let me off the plane without a passport. So they're just, it's just good business. They don't want to end up stuck with me. But right now, the United States government does not require a passport, a driver's license, anything to leave this country. What kind of road are we traveling down? I mean, this is the administration that has passed a law saying that the Fourth Amendment doesn't apply anymore. That they can do sneak and peek searches of your house. That you don't have the right to privacy. That they can listen in on your telephone calls anytime they want, especially if you're a Democrat. This is the administration that has said that the international protections against torture no longer apply. They're changing the rules of the game. This is the administration that has said, well, I've got a whole long list here. I don't want to start down the list. My point here, the purpose here is not to scare you. It's to say that the people who are running this government right now, these right-wing Republican extremists, are not acting in a way that is consistent with the traditions of this country. This country has noble and high ideals. We haven't always acted them out. I'll give you that. We had slavery. We slaughtered the Native Americans. Women couldn't even vote until 1920. I'll give you all that. But nonetheless, we held the values. We held the ideals. The rest of the world wanted to imitate us. And I would say right up until 5 years ago, the rest of the world always wanted to imitate us. In 1989, 15,000 people marched into Tiananmen Square carrying a 36-foot-tall papier-mâché replica of the Statue of Liberty, willing to risk their lives, to lay down their lives. And many of them did. Quoting Thomas Paine and Thomas Jefferson, "We were the beacon of liberty to the world." It is not the direction that the right-wingers in Congress, Republicans and a few Democrats as well, are taking us now. And it's so important that we participate in the political process now, and that no matter how the election plays out tomorrow, that we continue to participate and continue to speak out. Because I'm telling you, it's all about the parade. Politicians never wake up one day and say, gee, I think I'll suddenly become small D Democrat. I think someday, I think I'll become, you know, egalitarian. I think I will be committed to the ideals of American democracy. I think I'll start Social Security. I think I'll, you know, whatever it may be. It doesn't happen. What happens is the parade gets going and people say, politicians look around and go, whoa, that's a pretty big parade. I better join it. Teddy Roosevelt was elected vice president as a white, rich, pro-business Republican. He became the trust buster. Franklin Roosevelt was elected as a moderate, middle-of-the-road Democrat. He transformed America, reinvented this country, brought back the American middle class. Excuse me, I had to sneeze there. So it is not about who we elect, frankly. I got an email, or I got a letter, actually, a couple days ago from a person saying, we have to start electing good leaders. No. If we get active, if we become the parade, some politician's going to come along and say, hey, I'm going to run out in front of this parade and lift a flag. The politicians will follow. It always works. And not just at the elected level. I mean, look at the Supreme Court with Roe v. Wade in 73 and Brown versus Board of Education in 54. On the light side, on the dark side, on, you know, for the bad in 1898, Plessy versus Ferguson. They simply were reflecting the majority of public opinion. And so our job has to be that public opinion and to be very outspoken about it. We want our country back. We want an America back that we can be proud of. Jeff in Denver, Colorado. Hey, Jeff, we have about a minute before we have to take a break. What's up?
Okay, something everybody should know about today, since we have so many problems with voting, but nobody bothers to really, no one's really quantified it well, is the website reportvotingproblems.org. That's a place where you can report any kind of problem, you know, from voting registration to voting machine problems. And actually, I'm putting up a form there tonight for robocalls. We're going to quantify that so we can actually get an idea what's really going on rather than just have this be anecdotal.
Reportvotingproblems.org?
.com. Or .com. .org.com. Both domains will work.
Great.
So reportvotingproblems.com.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah. Jeff. We need to quantify this and actually be able to identify for once what the hell's going on.
Indeed. Thank you. Thank you, Jeff. Well done. Donna in Mountain View, California. Hey, Donna, we got to take a break here. You have a quick phone call to toss out?
It can be quick. The number to call if you're having trouble voting is 1-866-OUR-VOTE.
OURVOTE. 1-866-OURVOTE. And that's Voter Protection's number?
Right, correct.
Great. Donna, thanks so much. If you have something to add, I'll put you on hold here. We'll pick you up on the other side of the break. 45 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman program.
Cheney's got a gun.
Look out.
Dick Cheney shot someone. Cindy Sheehan better run. Better watch her liberal buns. Tell him that the war's not through.
Yes, indeed. Well, in fact, Dick Cheney says he's going hunting tomorrow. That's what he's going to do for Election Day. Go out and kill small things. Yeah. No, I'm serious. I'm not making this up. That's what he's going to do. He's going to go out and he's going to go to some place where they've got some small animals in a cage, a very large cage. And he's going to run around with a gun and a whole bunch of guys and maybe some dogs and try and kill them. It's what he does for fun. So, yeah, I can get hunting, especially if you eat what you hunt. I can't get hunting on these protected game reserves where when he shot Harry Whittington, they'd actually had to let the doves out of the box about an hour before he got there. And they said, okay, this is where we let them out. And doves don't travel very far. I just don't get it. I'm sorry. It's whatever. You know, it's just I just don't get it. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Jan in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Jan, what's up?
Well, I hope you don't shoot another lawyer. Melissa Hart and Rick Santorum have new ads out in Pennsylvania. They're saying especially Santorum. He's saying how he's been working with Nancy Pelosi and Hillary Clinton on all these objects. And not only that, yesterday I saw Nat, his wife was on crying to keep her family together.
Oh, geez.
She was actually wiping tears from her eyes. But you know what? He's putting out a lot of stuff about him saving the Oakdale military position here. I remember when that came up with the Pentagon. He said he has his hands off that. The Pentagon's handling it. So
yeah.
I guess this man stooped as low as he could go. Now he has his wife campaigning for him.
Yeah, well, he's pretty desperate, Jim. Rick Santorum is in big trouble, and he's in big trouble because, as I said earlier, the agenda of these right-wing extremists is not consistent with the perspective of Americans.
Well, I want to thank you for everything you did so far up this election. Tomorrow it's our turn, and I hope we can do it right.
Yeah, well, I hope so too, Jim.
And you have a nice day, and I hope you have a real good election day.
Thank you, Jim.
Okay,
thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. Donna in Mountain View. Hey, we were talking a minute ago.
Yeah, hi, Tom. Love your show, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah, anyway, I'd like to talk a little about the campaign of deception that Arnold Schwarzenegger has been running in California.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, a week after he signed the global warming bill, AB 32, which all the newspapers covered and the radio shows, and in order to show how moderate he was, he gutted the bill with an executive order.
You're kidding. He's doing what Bush is doing?
Yeah, it's sort of like a signing statement, but this is the Arnie way, I guess.
Now, see, this is really interesting. Louise and I were talking, my wife and I were talking about this a couple of days ago. She said, do you think, you know, Schwarzenegger is going to win in California? Sure looks like he is. And I said, yeah. And she said, you know, because he's becoming more like a Democrat. And I said, yeah, he's taking those positions. And she said, do you think that they, you know, I'm badly paraphrasing our conversation, but, you know, what are your thoughts on that? And my take on it, and apparently I was wrong. Because Louise was being very skeptical about this, and I was perhaps being naive. I said, the job of a politician is to represent people, not to lead people. We don't elect leaders in the United States. We elect representatives, including governors. And so if Schwarzenegger started out being a right-wing crank, and he tried to bust up the nurses' union, and he tried, you know, all this weird stuff in California, and it didn't work. The people rejected it. If he decided to change and become more like what the people want, that's actually a good thing in my mind. But, you know, because then he's doing what a politician should do, which is reflect the will of the people. But it sounds to me like, Donna, what you're telling me is that he didn't really change, that he's just pretending to change.
That's what it looks like.
Yeah.
And also, before the election, he took action finally to help lower prescription drug costs. But before that, he vetoed five bills to lower drug costs. And over the weekend, he attended the funeral of the deceased firefighters that lost their lives in Southern California.
Mm-hmm.
But last year, he was trying to cut their pensions and cut their death benefits.
Yeah. Surprise.
So there's just a lot of hypocrisy and misrepresentation and deception there.
Yeah. So for our listeners in California, take that into consideration. Donna, thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. David in Seattle, Washington.
Okay.
Hey, David.
Hi, I just want to let you know concerning the guy in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, Ricky Santorum.
Yeah, he has been sending campaign workers of his own to the Green Party, plus funds to help them out.
Oh, really? So that they can siphon votes off from the Democrat, from Bob Casey.
Right, and the Green Party candidate in Virginia has said she will tell her voters to vote for either Republican or Democrat, whichever one promises to help her get a transit bill through for Northern Virginia.
Yeah, well, see, that's collegial. I mean, that is how it should be with instant runoff voting. You develop coalitions or
right. Well, the Green Party, 1 or 2% voting in Virginia will get their vote to George Allen.
Yeah, but see, it's I have great respect for David Cobb, for example, who ran for the Green Party for president. He had this strategic campaign where in those states where the Green Party was going to be absolutely or the Democrats was John Kerry was going to be absolutely safe, he basically wasn't campaigning. And he knew that he wasn't going to hurt Kerry. In those states where the Green Party could have harmed Kerry, if my recollection serves me right, I may be wrong, but I don't think so, he didn't campaign. And that the opposite of what Ralph Nader did. And I thought that was a really good thing, because the fact of the matter is that, like it or not, we're stuck with a two-party system. It was, you know, James Madison agonized over it. You can read all about it in Federalist Number 10, but that's what we have, is a two-party system. Hey, tomorrow and Tuesday and Wednesday, pre- and post-election day coverage. Well, it's, yeah, on- and post-election day coverage, I guess it should be called. Guests and voting experts, Mark Crispin Miller, Brad Friedman, Stephen Rosenfeld, Jeffrey Feldman, and more right here. That and your calls on the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the radio support group of, by, and for We the People. Thanks for being with us today. And remember, my friends, democracy begins with you. Activism begins with you. Voting begins with you. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.